Ed Wyatt for Moorabbin Indoor Sports and the new Jump Central Trampoline Centre. Enjoy a world of high flying. Go to jumpcentral.com.au.
Eduardo, plenty going on, as we've said. Nice to see you, sir.
Good to see you, Harf. It is, I didn't even know there was Thursday Night Footy. That's the first, and I'm a pretty aware guy.
You're a very aware guy.
That's the first I knew about it. So there is Wednesday Night Football tonight. Thursday Night Football. Friday Night Football. Saturday Night Football. Sunday, well, Twilight? No.
Sunday, there's a afternoon encounter, I think a 3:20 game.
You know what was great last week, by the way? On Sunday, I went to meet an old friend of mine, someone I hadn't seen in more than 30 years, if you can believe that or not.
That's a long time.
She travels the world as a human resources specialist, so pretty good gig. Singapore, Melbourne.
Great gig.
Everywhere.
Well, you're dealing with a lot of people's problems.
Yeah, it's kind of like that Clooney movie, Up in the Air, where if you could fly around the world and fire people, there is an element of that. But it was cool seeing an afternoon 1:10 football game. All the Collingwood fans on the train around the city. There was a really good vibe because there's something about that afternoon football, as we've discussed many times on this show. It was very, very entertaining to sort of see the atmosphere. And it was funny, as I was going home on the train, it was a very empty train, and it went the roundabout way through the loop, and then it went to Jollymont. And there was a guy sitting across from me with his wife. He was about 60 years old, probably 70 years old. And he had a cake, like from a bakery, you know, one of those really fancy things. Yeah, and he had that. And as we pulled up to the MCG, Jollymont, there were just stacks of Collingwood fans lining the train, the side of the train to get on. And the guy looks over and goes, "Oh, dear." And it was so funny. And the people were incredibly well-behaved. There were no issues at all. But it was very, very funny just to see this guy with his cake sitting there after his Sunday brunch and going, "Oh, no, here come the Collingwood fans."
Well, Collingwood fans do that to a lot of people.
They do.
Particularly when they're holding cake. That's happened. But if you like Thursday Night Footy, get used to it. For the next 4 weeks, we've got Thursday Night
Is that
Footy.
Right?
Yeah, this week and three
right.
more.
Right. There you go.
So get used to that for the next month of the AFL season. Now, we've got a lot to talk about today.
We do. Stacks.
Stacks. We've got a special guest helping us through.
Yeah, we wanted to get him in last week, but he had to, imagine this, had to negotiate some stuff for his career.
We know there's
How's he put that over Harf?
Well, we're hopefully going to track down some information about this career and find out what the hell is going on. And we know there's plenty of Australian basketball royalty in action in the NBA finals at the moment. But we've got one in the studio with us. Mark Worthington joins us. G'day, Wurtho.
How you doing?
Good, mate. Good. Now, while you were looking after your career last week, what the hell's going on now?
Priorities, I know.
Where do we rank in the scheme of things?
Yeah, well, I said, Ed, I'm in. And then I got a phone call saying, well, you might want to sort this out first. And I said, fair enough.
Probably right.
Yeah, but I was one of those people on Sunday as well, Ed.
Oh, were you?
On the train?
Yeah, right. I was on the train as well.
You didn't see the cake, did you?
I didn't see the cake, but I was at Jollymont Station. I actually had my father come over, who's a Collingwood man. Obviously, his brother played for Collingwood, Kevin Worthington. And it was good, you know. I don't go to many Collingwood games, but they get into it.
It's a great atmosphere, absolutely.
And, it was really good to see the Giants firsthand as well, even though they lost the game. Geez, are they going to be scary good in
They're
the
gonna
future?
Be very good. KB reckons, the great Kevin Bartlett reckons, 2017, they just lift the cup. It's just that clear cut for him.
Really?
And all the years he's watched footy.
Right.
They just lift the cup.
I there don't disagree with that. Mm. And I think they'll be lifting it a couple of years after that as well. Mm.
Well, that's a bit of a concern. We don't want that. You can have one.
Yeah, that's
then
right.
You've got to bugger off for a bit. Yeah. Something else can go.
Coming from a Hawthorn supporter. That's rich.
No, but at least we've been around a while. Not these startups, but given the world. A lot of club supporters out there haven't won a flag, were they?
Talking to a Fremantle supporter.
Oh, well, exactly. There you go, yeah.
So well, I know all about it.
At least you've been close.
Oh, yeah.
At least you've had a crack.
We've had one crack.
Yeah, but you're getting closer to a second one.
I hope so.
To the second one.
We've lived into the break, but I hope we're you're going freshen up.
Kind of like the Cleveland Cavaliers, right? Have never won the NBA title.
Which?
Since 1970 was their first year in the NBA.
It's a long time.
It is a very long time. Golden State hasn't won since 75. And so that's a pretty long time as well, too. But they have won one there. And I think they won two back when they were the Philadelphia Warriors. So this would be their fourth title, but only their second since moving to Golden State.
We love the Golden State.
We do.
Well, it looks like they'll do something about that record today, boys.
And the Cavs have got a bit of a drought as well. Cleveland, as I said, 143 combined major seasons.
Yeah.
Between titles for Cleveland.
The last
city.
Yeah.
The city.
48 was the last Indians World Series, I believe, and the Browns have never won the Super Bowl, never been to the Super Bowl. They did win the NFL title before the leagues merged and there was a Super Bowl. So that kind of counts. That was 1964, I believe, when they won their last title.
That's a lot of sporting seasons without love, isn't
it's unbelievable. Brutal. Yeah.
It's like barracking for Fremantle.
It is incredible.
It's not quite that bad. Not quite that bad barracking for the Dockers. What have you made of this series, were they? We've spoken to Ed a bit about this, but we haven't heard your take on this.
Yeah, look, first things first, it really annoys me that they call Blatt a rookie coach. And I think you guys touched on this last week. Mm. But if you win 16 European championships, you're a pretty good coach. And I think he's one of the more decorated European coaches ever to coach between Cesca and Maccabi Tel Aviv.
Russian national team as well,
But he's been outcoached in this series by Steve Kerr.
By rookie coach.
Tell me how. I don't know the game as intricately as you. Tell me how.
I think he's been very reactive. Steve Kerr made the bold statement of starting Andre Iguodala and putting Bogut on the bench. And might I add, Andrew Bogut has been an absolute star with going from a starter all season long to playing basically zero to 3 minutes a game. But you see him every time out being supportive to his teammates. I think that he just is the great example of what Australian basketballers are and why so many NBA teams are going after Aussies now because they're just great teammates and Bogut's been a fantastic teammate. But going back to my point, Kerr made the decision, I'm going to go with a smaller lineup.
Yep.
This is who I think is going to win. The last two games hadn't been kind to us. We're going to take Bogut off the floor. We're going to spread the floor more. We're going to let our shooters do what they do. Mm. And Iguodala has been fantastic throughout this series. David Blatt, instead of going, okay, well, I think Mozgov and Tristan Thompson have been doing great. He goes, well, I'll downgrade as well. And I think Mozgov only played 9 minutes in game five after having 28 and 12 or whatever he had in game four.
Yep.
So I thought every sub that he did during that game was reactive to what Steve Kerr did. If Festus Ezeli, great name by the way, Bogut,
we love that name.
David Lee came in. That's when they brought Mozgov back in, and it didn't work for him. They should have stuck with what worked, and they've been doing it so far in Game Six. But Mozgov's been a beast again, and it's given him a bit of defensive presence. But Golden State have got their tails up at the moment.
And I think David Lee, as you mentioned, was another great move by Steve Kerr. He brings in a guy who can work the pick and roll with Curry, a good passer. He can score around the basket.
He
is horrible, and he hasn't played much at all, if at all, today.
No.
I haven't been watching as much as closely this game. But just that little injection of Lee for a couple of games made a huge difference.
How happy is David Lee just quietly? He's sitting on the bench, hardly playing any minutes and going, you know what? I'm the highest paid player on this team. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But, that's a one-time All-Star at the Knicks.
Yeah.
He was a fantastic player at the Knicks. He can rebound really well for a guy that can't jump over a piece of paper.
No.
There's
a lot of Knicks. I'm not sure you want to be talking about the hops, Wortho. Anyway. I've seen Wortho throw a few down. Don't get me wrong. Someone wants to know about Ben Simmons. There was a story on The Project last night. About Ben Simmons, obviously son of Day, former Melbourne Tiger, who is the number one high school basketball player in America last year going to LSU. What are your thoughts on him?
I got to see him at the Boomers camp last year. He's 6'10", left-handed. Everyone loves a lefty.
Lefty.
In any sport, if they're left-handed, they're unique and different. The world is his oyster. He is so scary good for his age. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
And you see already this year, LSU, the college that he's committed to, has based their entire marketing
around
him as he's coming.
Yeah.
And that's never happened before in college. But they've based it on one kid that has not played a single college game yet. Like, this is the greatest thing that will ever happen to our school.
It's actually gotten a little bit of criticism, Harv, because of that whole Ed O'Bannon thing where the lawsuit about NCAA using players' names and numbers, like in video games and things like that.
Yeah.
So this got a little bit of criticism because it was like number 25 is coming. I think that's what they...
Yeah.
And it was kind of like basically building the whole marketing campaign, is where they said, around this kid who is 18 or 19, isn't getting any money for it. He's getting a scholarship, obviously, but very interesting move. But that's how special they think he is. And they're bringing, they're taking a tour out here. That's the other thing. They're doing, going to play Melbourne United, LSU. LSU, yeah. And they're going to play a couple of games out here. So they're really trying to capitalize on the Ben Simmons phenomenon.
Wow. And just to put it in perspective, they think that this is the greatest thing that's going to happen to LSU. There was a guy called Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, I was going to say, they had Shaq, didn't they?
Yeah.
They did.
That's how big of a deal it is.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And how well he's going.
And let's not forget Chris Jackson, Mahmoud Abdul-Raouf, who was mentioned the other day as one of the best guys other than Stephen Curry who could split defenders like really, really well and score. He was he's an interesting character. If you look him up, he had Tourette syndrome, and that kind of affected his just sort of the way he played. But at LSU, he was unbelievable. Chris Jackson, then he changed his name, became a Muslim, changed his name to Mahmoud Abdul-Raouf, an unbelievable player. Played for the Nuggets.
Cult figure at the Nuggets.
Yeah, really extraordinary player, but had a few issues, obviously, and some of it affected by that physical factor of having Tourette's.
Right, yeah. Well, that would affect you to some degree, I'm sure.
Yes, exactly.
20 past one, Ed White is with us, as he normally is on a Wednesday afternoon. Mark Worthington, our special guest, going to hang around and talk some more hoops after the break. It's putting the breakdown in the NBA final series. We've got Game 6 currently underway, and the score with 10 and a quarter remaining in the last quarter. It's Golden State by 7 points at the minute, so 7-point buffer to the Warriors. They keep that up, they walk away with rings on their fingers. More after this. 25 past one, Ed White with us on a Wednesday afternoon, talking about the world of sport. Mark Worthington, our very special guest. Heavy focus today, of course, on Game 6 of the NBA Finals, where the Warriors seem to be just able to rally and find a way to just extend or keep the lead that they've got over the Cleveland Cavaliers. There's 7 minutes to go in the last quarter, and it's Golden State by 11 points. Steph Curry with, what's he got tonight? 17, is it 17?
17, looks like, yeah.
17's going all right, just keeps shooting them from downtown. He's very sweet outside the arc, isn't he, that boy?
He might be the best shooter in NBA history.
Pretty good shooter.
History
of the NBA. I think the stat the other day was his contested three-point shots, he shoots at the same average as the normal NBA player's uncontested three-point shot.
Is that right?
So anytime he's contested and he shoots it, it's a fair chance it's going to go down.
There's Klay Thompson hitting one. It just, I think they're going to push
it
away.
It's an all-star three-point shootout now,
well,
isn't it?
It is pretty
Cleveland
much.
Have to chase.
They do. And we should mention, this is obvious, but, you know, you lose two all-stars. You lose Kevin Love. You lose Kyrie Irving.
Yep.
You know, take two all-stars away from, let's say, leave Steph Curry, but take Iggy and Klay Thompson away from Golden State, and what do you got? So you do have to look at it from that way. That, you know, I mean, LeBron has done everything he possibly can within his power to keep this thing close. But
is it the greatest individual performance? I can't think of anyone that's probably been better that's done it in all assets of the game. Scoring, rebounding, assists. He has literally taken the team, put it on his back.
Yeah.
And done everything. And there was actually a funny photo the other day of LeBron by itself, and it said the 2015-16 Cleveland Cavaliers team. I thought that was hilarious.
Well, he's got 26 tonight, I think. 15 rebounds, 7 assists. So he's on the way to another triple-double. Having said that, he's probably had to, hasn't he? Because there's not much with... And with Kyrie out and with Kevin Love out as well, there's not a lot of real qualities around him in terms of this elite level of quality. And so he's had to do it.
Absolutely. And at the same time... You've got to remember, those two All-Stars that we're talking about haven't had playoff experience before this season.
True,
so we don't know how they would react in this situation. Obviously, Kyrie was playing fairly well until he did his knee.
Yep.
We don't know what Kevin Love could have done, and we're not going to find out this year, obviously. But you look at the Warriors, you know, Iguodala has been huge for him, but he's had playoff experience. This is a guy that's been on the American team a couple of years ago.
Yeah, true.
And people forget about that.
Yeah.
You know, David Lee's been there before. I think what Steph Curry's done this year has been outstanding. But having said that, I think LeBron's proved in this playoffs that he is still the greatest player at the moment.
Well, he's pretty keen to tell us that the other day too, that I'm the best player on the planet. But if you know that, if you are, it's not really boasting.
And it doesn't matter what sport you play. If you're the greatest player in the league on the planet, your team always has a chance to win.
Yeah.
Well, particularly when you're one of five on the court at any one time here.
Yeah.
Like Nat Fyfe's a pretty handy player for you guys at Frio.
He's all right.
But because there's 18, there's a few more
that's a good point.
Relying on.
Yep.
I think Fyfe does what he does, but, you know, Mundy and Lockie Neal.
Well, that's right.
They're having great seasons as
no
well.
No doubt about that. No doubt. Tell me about your viewing of Matty Dellavedova's story. Obviously, much hyped through games 2 and 3, particularly when he was doing a hell of a role for the Cavaliers. A bit quieter since then, and the Warriors have changed up their system a bit. But what have you made of the whole Dellavedova thing?
Couldn't be happier or prouder of a mate. What he's done this series has been outstanding. And I think Delly would be the first person to tell you he's not the most talented person in the world, but I doubt there is a harder worker on the Cleveland team, LeBron included, because you don't get to where Delly is with, and this is not a knock on him, with the physical attributes that he has, playing in the greatest, probably, athletic league in the world.
Mm. Yeah.
And for him to be able to do what he's done so far this series has been fantastic. I think fatigue's caught up to him.
Yeah.
Defense takes a lot out of you, especially if you have to harass someone like Steph Curry as much as what he has.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's worn him down throughout the playoffs, but I couldn't be prouder of a mate of what he's done.
Does this make him hungrier? Do you think he says, I can now be in a 7 or 8 man rotation and I'm going to work my ass off over the summer?
He is a hungry, hungry individual for team success. And I think a lot of people have said, you know, he's going to get paid after this. I'd find it really difficult to see him leaving Cleveland.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good.
It's sort of in the same mold as what Paddy...
Yeah, right.
Situation
yes.
Paddy
yes.
was in last year. I think Paddy could have got more money elsewhere, but wanted to stay with an organization that he knows has another chance to win.
What about the... I'd love to get your feedback, and both you guys, on the way he's been perceived and reported on from the expert commentators, particularly the past players.
Yep.
There seemed it was almost a resentment towards the way he plays, but perhaps because of he's not that superstar, and hasn't got the elite-level skills, perhaps as you were talking about before, but there seems to be a hostility towards the way he plays from the past greats. Not so much the commentators who were just doing play-by-play stuff, but the past greats.
Yeah, look, I think we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago during the Atlanta series. Because of the football background, see ball, get ball.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way us as Australians have been taught, no matter what the sport is.
Yeah.
The first to the ball gets the ball. Look at the Kyle Korver incident where he tore Kyle Korver's ankle up. If Kyle Korver would have dove on the ball, he wouldn't have been injured.
Yeah.
Yep. He gets first to it.
But he didn't. And I think what Al Horford did to him was just a frustration thing out of what happened.
Yeah, I agree.
Out of the Korver thing.
Yep.
We get to this series and, you know, the commentators saying, I got really annoyed about some of the commentators. But, I mean, you can't blame a guy for wanting the ball.
Yeah. And that's... It's a pretty good trait to have, really.
Yeah, I know.
It's a great trait to have. And like I've said before, Delly doesn't have the greatest physical attributes, but... I don't think anyone out-hustles him on the court.
And what's the difference between that and some of these blatant fouls we've seen? And they go, well, it's the playoffs. You know, you can't give him an easy layup. To me, that's the same thing.
Yeah.
You don't dive for a ball in the 55th game of the year on a cold night in Memphis when no one's in the arena. You know, I get that. You're not diving at a guy's legs. This is the playoffs.
Yeah.
You've got to go get everything you can. So
pushing someone in midair, to me, is a lot worse than diving
on
the ball.
Couldn't agree more.
And we've seen that multiple times with LeBron this playoffs.
Agreed.
Where he's going for a layup and people are trying to shove him out of the air, which is a lot more dangerous.
Well, Bogey got him a good one. Yeah, game 4, was it? Game 4?
He did? Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So Bogey's was a little bit different. I think he actually was protecting the ball. Like, he came in with full intent to foul him.
Yeah.
But he did it all with his body. When people are in the air and shoving so with two
hands.
Yeah,
that's...
Wrapping him around the neck.
Yeah, I agree.
Drag down.
Yeah. That doesn't get talked about.
I made a tweet the other day that a common foul in the NBA would equal a ejection in the NBA.
Well,
but apparently
true.
It's the same game.
That's a different issue, I think.
I think LeBron was going for a layup and Iguodala wrapped him up and put him in a sleeper hold.
That's a common foul. Yeah, that's an ejection. You're right. That's
but the
true.
NBA, you get thrown out.
You get 2 weeks for that. You get 2 matches for that. Interesting. It's
you're right.
High contact and reckless.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
The AFL would have a field day with that.
Well, it's either intentional or careless. Yeah. It was definitely intentional grabbing him.
Yeah.
Are you hanging around? Can you hang around?
I can.
Yeah, hang around. Be a
part of some golf.
Well, we've got plenty more to talk about. 27-2. Mark Worthington's with us. Ed Wyatt as well, as he always is on a Wednesday. And the scoreline, game 6. Golden State up by 15, just under 5 minutes remaining in the game. So it looks like she's just about all over. Back shortly. 20-2 on halftime. Ed Wyatt with us on a Wednesday afternoon. Mark Worthington, our special guest, has been good enough to hang around. As we turn our attention now, boys, so even though that Golden State, 11 points with 3 minutes 40 remaining in game. 6 o'clock, they're going to win it. To the U.S. Open, Edward.
Yes, big. Back in my old hood, Harf. Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah.
You'll see it's University Place.
Right.
That's kind of like one of the upscale versions, parts of Tacoma, which is, Tacoma's kind of like an Oakland, if you will, kind of a hard, rough, blue-collar town, but University Place is great. Chambers Bay, beautiful golf course. I haven't even seen it because it's been built in the last 8 years. So
it's very new.
Yeah, I looked at it on a map. It's like right close to where I used to live.
You cannot compare anything to Oakland. Oakland is
okay,
Oakland.
You're right.
Tacoma is a downscale of Oakland.
Okay. It's a little
Oakland
bit better
is a
Oakland.
Different breed.
All right. Fair enough.
Oh, well, there's one man who'd know more about that than us is Ed Plouffe, athletic director and golf coach at Bellarmine Prep around the area. Ed, good afternoon to you.
Well, good afternoon to you.
Great to have you on board. We are very excited about this Chambers Bay course. We're only in the last week or so, from sports fans' point of view, knew of its existence. How's the build-up over there?
It's people are pretty excited about it. It's a fairly new course that a lot of us are able to play because it's a municipal course. It's actually owned by Pierce County, which Tacoma sits in the middle of. So there's a whole bunch of people that were walking the course today for practice rounds that had actually played the course, and people are excited. People are excited to see the pros and to have the U.S. Open in the Pacific Northwest for the very first time.
Ed, it's Ed. Great to talk to you after all these years.
Good to talk to you as well.
So much has been made about how crazy this course is. The guy from the U.S. Open saying you got to play more than two or three rounds or you're going to be in trouble. And the initial, of course, Ian Poulter, who is always Mr. Controversial, he had some tweets about it. Is it really, in your opinion, going to be this crazy for these guys?
I think what really makes it different, I think there's a lot of players that are used to playing links golf. A lot of foreign players are used to playing links golf, and a lot of the American players have played links golf. But what makes this course different is the elevation changes in its links layout. There's about a 400-foot elevation change on the golf course itself.
Oh,
and so what you get around the greens is you get a lot of slopes, and it can get a little funky around the greens. I don't think they're used to. So that's what I think he meant by you need to play it 10 times to get it. But I don't think these guys need to play it 10 times. They're pretty good.
Hey, Ed, it's Mark Worthington. We're just wondering, what's the course record there? Like, what can we expect out of around there, out of the pros?
We were talking about that today, a number of us, and we think that the winning score is probably going to be between 5 and 7 under par. I don't know what the what the course record is for the setup that they're using for the Open.
Yeah.
We did have the U.S. Amateur here about 4 years ago, and it was set up. The course has really changed from that. There were some holes that were very, very difficult, and they needed to soften them. So it's kind of apples and oranges between what the players are facing today and what they faced 4 years ago.
It's a fair way away from what the USGA normally book for a US Open, obviously the links style course and that type of thing. What's been the attraction for the USGA to get to Chambers Bay?
I think two things. Number one, I think they want to have their tournaments on courses that people, the average Joe, can go out and play. They did that at Bethpage Black.
Yep.
Back in New York, a number of years ago, that was a very popular decision. So I think that was one decision. And the other part of the decision was even with Pinehurst last year, if you go back and look at Pinehurst, some of these courses are really reverting back to their natural state, some of these great old courses. They're kind of taking away that contemporary American golf look. They're watering them less. They're browning them out. They're firmer, they're faster. It could be somewhat of a glimpse of the future of American golf. We're running out of water over here. We're not totally running out of water. We don't have enough to keep some of these golf courses as green as we've kept them in the past.
And Ed, one last one for you. We're not too far from Sunset Beach, where I used to live, where the train rattled through my backyard. Is the train going to be steaming by there, and Tiger, for one of another example, of going to stop his putt while the Burlington Northern rumbles by?
The trains were steaming by today during the practice rounds. A lot of the Amtrak, the passenger trains, go by pretty quickly. There was a really long cargo train that went by that lasted for about 10 minutes. The guys, they didn't bat an eye. They just kept playing.
Right.
So, of course, it was practice, too.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. The train line comes into play for a lot of the hulls.
Yeah, that's right. I can tell you, they used to just stop right in my backyard. It would stop, and they'd shunt the...
What, the train would?
Oh, yeah. It was like... you'd wake up in the middle of the night with a train in your backyard. I'm not kidding you.
Yeah.
Well, it's very exciting to have it at a course like Chambers Bay. And we are wrapped to have you on board this afternoon, Ed, with us to talk us through the situation. Thanks for that.
Well, I think everybody's going to enjoy it. I hope you guys watch it. It's going to be interesting to see who comes through. And I think Adam Scott's going to be in the running. I watched him hit some balls today, and he looked laser beam sharp, so look out.
Hold up a sign, Ed. Hold up a sign that says, "Hey, Ed Wyatt."
I will, for sure.
Thanks.
You're a good man. Thank you very much. Ed Plouffe, athletic director and golf coach at Bellarmine Prep over there in Washington. It's a fantastic course. Golf Australia tweeted out
crazy,
some images yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's just brilliant. So far away from the USGA stuff.
Like, yeah, I know, which I like. I like that fact. And as Ed said, the guys are pretty good. I think they'll be able to make an adjustment.
Although there's apparently a couple of players, a good group of players that are just their head shot already.
Right.
They just can't get their head around it. So they're beaten before they start.
That's pretty good heading into the US Open.
Yeah.
So I'm stuffed on this one.
I'm not sure they're the cream of the crop, those players, but to sort of roll around the fringe. Not going to make it on tour if you can't get your head right. We've got a minute 19 to go in game six. 12-point lead. Make that nine-point now after that three-pointer for the Cavs with 70 seconds to go. So it'll be all over.
It's all over.
Maybe after this break. Well, I could swear that about 3 minutes ago, it was 70 seconds to go in game six. There's now 55 seconds to go, and it's 8-point lead to the Golden State Warriors. So how long can a minute go for, Werther? You know this better than I do.
A long, long time. When you said it before that it would be over, I just shook my head. I said, there's not a chance. Hey, it's good to see J.R. Smith show up for the finals. He's hit the last two threes.
Yeah, the last minute. Why not? Hey, Harf, can we sneak in a very quick mention that the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup?
Of course you can. Three in
four
the last
games to two over Tampa Bay. Yeah, third win. I don't like the Blackhawks, but they are a very, very good organization, as the Canadians would say, and really deserved it, 4-2 over the Lightning. So third time. So in the last 5 years, it has been either the Kings have won two and the Blackhawks have won three. Only the Bruins interrupted that period. So pretty impressive from the Chicago Blackhawks.
Great effort by the Blackhawks. Saw them play one time in the United Arena.
Did you?
United Center, they call
You've
it.
Seen greatness.
I have seen greatness. It was good fun against the Flyers. It was a good day. I haven't seen Major League Baseball, though, but Dan Clark has seen plenty of it. He's the Orioles blogger, and the Orioles have had a massive day today, just by the way. Dan, g'day.
G'day, boys. How are you?
Going very well. Thank you, pal. Now, tell me, what happened today? Why are you so up and about?
the O's have had a pretty ordinary start to the season, but in the last 2 weeks, they've really clicked into gear, and I think we all saw that today. They hit 8 home runs, which had never been done in the franchise history. So I think they end up winning 19-3. So it was a pretty good day.
That is a very impressive day. Now, Dan, last time we talked, you were headed to Baltimore on your honeymoon. You were getting married, and you were going to take your lovely bride to see the Orioles. How did that pan out?
Yeah, the wedding was great. We were really lucky with the weather out on the beach down in Middle Park. So that was a good day. And then headed across to America, and I think we did 8 cities in 5 weeks over there. And, we had a short pit stop for 3 nights in Baltimore and caught up with a few people over there and went to watch a couple of those games.
What was it like? You've done a lot of Orioles blogging. You've done some Orioles interviews, radio, things like that. But you'd never been to Baltimore. You'd never met a lot of those people that you were working with and for. What was that like?
Yeah, it was certainly beyond our wildest expectations. People were taking us out for dinners and lunches and pre-game opening day parties, an opportunity to meet up with a few of the guys I'd written with over there and a few of the guys I'd done some radio work with. And then I guess the big one, which was completely unexpected, was catching up with Adam Jones, probably their best player.
Right.
And he took us on a tour out onto the diamond. We watched the boys warm up and went and had a chat to him in the clubhouse for a while after that as well. It was pretty spectacular.
Now, we know, Dan, that the NFL is the big beast over there, but baseball is the national pastime. In terms of comparisons, where would the support for the Orioles in Baltimore compare with? What team would they compare with in perhaps the AFL?
Well, they play in probably the most competitive and probably the biggest division. You know, they play against the Yankees and the Red Sox in particular, those two. They're certainly not probably the you know, your Collingwood and your Carlton and your Essendon, your big mainstream clubs, but probably that next tier just below that.
Your Hawthorne, you know.
North Melbourne. North Melbourne.
North Melbourne.
Yeah, North Melbourne maybe, yeah.
A few years ago I would have said Northern, but yeah, they've had a pretty good run.
Don't go there, Dan.
They're certainly they're one of the big teams, and I guess being the only team in Baltimore, the whole state of Maryland and the whole city supports them.
So, you went over there on your honeymoon. You've done all this. What was your wife doing while you... I don't imagine she was out on the mound with you while you were having the tour or going into the clubhouse.
She came everywhere, except they didn't let her in the clubhouse, because of the obvious reasons. But, she was out on the ground with us, and she got to meet a few of the players as well. And, yeah, she came out to all the dinners and the lunches and... met up with a lot of people, and yeah, she enjoyed it a lot more than I thought she would. So it was going to be, a difficult 3 days out of the 5 weeks, but nah, she loved it as well.
Just a quick one before we let you go, Dan. Was this after or before the riots? Not to bring it down, I'm just curious.
We left Baltimore and flew to Hawaii, and the day we got to Hawaii, the riots started. So it was about, there's a bit of changeover, so I think it was about 2 days ago.
That must have kind of blown your mind, huh? When you'd just been there, and then all of a sudden this stuff happens.
Yeah, even just seeing footage on TV where we were a couple of days earlier, there was riots out the front of our hotel. There was riots out the front of the baseball stadium, and obviously games got postponed and so forth. So it's amazing to think that if it had been 2 days earlier. We probably would have been locked in our hotels the whole time.
Well, thankfully that didn't happen and you got out just in time, Dan. Sounds like a good trip too. We'll chat to you soon. Thanks, pal.
Too easy. Thanks, Harp.
Dan Clark, Orioles blogger with us on Halftime. Ed White with us, Mark Worthington as well. We get to a break. Funnily enough, that 55 seconds is still not over.
21 to go.
We're down to 21.
May not make it.
If we get back and it's not over, I'll spew up.